A good objective voice of reason that I've been referring to has been my mother. Whenever I sort of have like a clashing moment with one of the other girls, I watch it. I'm like, okay, well, what's the issue? I handled that well. I don't see a problem. And then I talked to my mom about the episode and she was like, you're kind of mean.
Fierce, fierce, fierce.
I love this podcast.
Fierce, fierce. Weather, fierce. Food, fierce.
Hello, I'm Joey Nolfi, Entertainment Weekly's RuPaul's Drag Race reporter, and before we get to our juicy interview with Plain Jane later in this episode, confirming that we have temporarily been licensed to C-SPAN as we bring you live coverage from inside the Kennedy Davenport House of International Affairs, where Congresswoman Davenport is about to give her verdict in a hearing related to Morphine Love Dion violating on the latest season 16 episode, the longstanding Kennedy Davenport treaty of no black stockings and white shoes on RuPaul's Drag Race, when she practiced her choreography for the power song with Jamal Sims, while indeed wearing black no-show stockings with white shoes.
And I'm Jillian Cederholm, Joey's podcast host equal. Just because I'm EW news director, don't make me less equal.
We apologize to our listeners there for the uncharacteristically not C-SPAN level volume of my podcast equals delivery here. We can confirm that we did get several looks turning around to look at us from inside the room. Jillian, we have to, Kennedy is about to give her verdict.
Black stockings, white shoes, shouldn't be allowed in the church.
A landmark ruling here, Jillian. Where, in your estimation, your professional equal estimation, does this leave Morphine? What kind of ramifications is she facing here after the House's ruling?
Well, I have to say, I think this sets a really dangerous precedent to call, first of all, to call this a church when this country was founded on a separation of church and stage. Frankly, I'm also really concerned about
stage.
I'm also concerned about your eyesight that you think Morphine is wearing black stockings at all when she's clearly bare-legged and wearing black ankle socks with clear boots through which you can see the line visible in a freeze frame, which I will be sharing with you now. Would you like to redact anything today or retract?
As I'm observing this, Jillian, I would ask that you... this is unofficial evidence that has not been entered into the House floor. This is pure speculation by the laws of the Kennedy Davenport International Treaty. That you can't actually, I'm now looking. It appears that perhaps Q is also in violation of the treaty. Indeed, Q is also in violation of the treaty. Dawn is also
I would violation
of this treaty. Excuse me, Miss Kennedy, I need to bring your attention now to this corner of the chamber. We also need to introduce Dawn and Q as defendants in this case. Thank you, Jillian Closet, for trying to expose me, but actually exposing Dawn and Q in the process. So thank you. Thanks.
Glad to be an
thank
informant.
You.
Taking down
informant. Well, we certainly wish Morphine the best, and we do have a plane to catch, a Plain Jane to be specific, whom I interviewed to get the tea on her season-long antics and her big immunity decision. That's coming up later in this episode. But before that, we need to break down the latest episode of season 16, which again proved my point last week that after Maya lip syncs, she returns to the workroom just like totally wild, just like running around, just completely letting loose. It is so funny. She was again clapping back at Morphine this episode, telling her that Morphine's plan of cutting her dress in a lip sync against Maya wouldn't have worked and that she was cute performing at home, but not here on Drag Race. She has also been really funny on social media this past week after sending Plasma home because, like, unfortunately, you predicted, Jillian, Maya has gotten so much hatred online from viewers and it has been so sad to watch, but I mean, this week, Maya's prospects looked up a little bit as RuPaul told them that they'll be writing and recording verses to the politically inspiring anthem Power and performing to the track later on the main stage. So, Jillian, you have some thoughts on this?
Well, yeah, I guess first, this is not a prediction that I was hoping would come true of Maya getting this hatred, but I am proud of her for the way she's handling it. And I mean,
funny.
She does seem to be able to let it wash right off her and is just firing back in a funny way instead of letting it affect her the way that we have seen some queens, unfortunately, in the past. But it did to me strike me in the beginning when they all come back into the workroom, it really seemed like they were setting it up for a Maya v. Morphine battle down the line. Maybe predicting that might be coming next episode, because they were just really giving that so much steam. And then they did show this moment of Plain and Morphine shit talking Myra. My God, I didn't even.
Myra, leave that in. No. Myra, that is like the second time that you've done it this season.
Myra. I don't know what's wrong with me. That's more like her and Morphine's couple name. But Morphine and Plain were calling Maya the Patrick Star of Drag Race, and that she didn't make, or that Morphine had to make Miami proud because Maya isn't. I mean, it was said in like a funny way, but it was behind Maya's back because Maya was out of earshot. And when she asked about it, they were like, oh, nothing. So it did seem like they might be setting something up there.
I agree. It does feel like we're saying, we can start to clock these things that are recurring themes, especially at like certain story points. So yeah, it does seem kind of like they might be setting this up at some point.
Yeah. Something else they were setting up was Dawn basically admitting that she's having lurid thoughts about her sister. She said, I'm constantly thinking about my sister, sometimes in ways I don't want to be. So it was a very horny episode for Dawn all around.
Well, Jillian, I would like to read your initial note that you have glossed over in this script. This is what Jillian had written into the script. Dawn basically admits to elfing herself to her sisters.
Yeah, that.
Which, accurate.
So we get to the songwriting phase. Nymphia admits, as she already has on social media, that Megami wrote all of her lyrics last time, but for the girl group challenge. But apparently fans only find it unfair when Maya gets help in a design challenge. But Nymphia is doing her go-to kind of fake whining, crying, questioning her ability. Like, I don't know what to write. I don't know. It's like, it's sort of getting a little old. Like, I understand being that kind of person having anxiety, but I kind of don't want to see it from Nymphia anymore, because she's fully capable. So she twists her lyrics into pretzels, trying to rhyme things with yellow and banana. And I think we see in the finished result that it really does not work without, she really did need Megami back for this one. The queens go to record their lyrics, and Maya hilariously attempts to rhyme the word equal with equal. I don't know why she couldn't come up with a sequel or a lethal. Leland tells her that she needs to emphasize the second reference more because it's the same word, she just starts high-pitched screaming it into the microphone, giving us another instantly iconic Maya moment. Then we get to the moment I have been begging for all season, choreography by Jamal Sims, who comes across as the nicest, most patient, encouraging man. What are you laughing at? You don't agree?
No, you just tying it back to, you're really stuck on Dawn elfing herself. That pause after saying Jamal comes.
Okay, no. My thoughts on Jamal have nothing to do with everyone thirsting over him and Untucked. I just think I don't know. I just love him on this show. I think he's so encouraging and is just like a very positive presence, and I love seeing him. He calls Q the least dancery girl, but praises her confidence. He also teaches Morphine the difference between nodding and swagger, or nodding with swagger and nodding like a chicken. This is also the moment, Joey, that you wanted to trick me into saying that Morphine violated the Kennedy Davenport international law by wearing black stockings and white shoes on stage, which I have proven is incorrect and what we call in journalism a gross factual error. So I will not state that. But speaking of shoes, did you catch, it's a very brief shot, but did you catch what Maya was wearing in the workroom? These slippers that are like walking on clouds or little cotton balls. Look at these shoes I'm putting in here.
Well, a gross factual error would be not clocking that Maya has been wearing those all season.
Yes. No, that would not be a gross factual error. Calling it a gross factual error would be a gross factual error. That's just an oversight. No. And I have located these shoes in purple on Amazon for $18 and will have them on my feet soon.
Are you going to enter this into court as evidence?
Yes.
Okay. Well, she's not. Oh, actually, she's not wearing black stockings with those. Okay. So they pass.
Okay. But, and so now you're calling the workroom church too. I mean, that's probably more accurate.
Yeah. A little bit more accurate.
Okay. Speaking of bonkers outfits, Nymphia's outfit was Grey so Gardens. Funny. This, yes, the Grey Garden, head to toe yellow, of course, as always, but the Grey Gardens like headscarf, but then this ginormous puffy yellow vest over a ginormous yellow puffy coat. Yes. And it was so funny to me because she's wearing it. You're watching her wear it like in every scene and just being like, this is so wild. And then not until they get to the choreography. So Morphine's been seeing her in this all day. Morphine looks and is like, I just noticed what Nymphia is wearing. Why is she wearing that? And it just reminded me of how 4 episodes later, Morphine finally noticed that Maya was wearing braces. So I just thought that was a little bit funny.
Yeah, it was funny. And this is definitely something that we should point out too, the Evil Dawn suggestions.
Evil Dawn is fully emerged.
I mean, I think that it almost came off to me like the way that everybody, the queens were reacting to us calling Dawn the evil elf of the season because of what we heard in the initial interviews. It almost felt like I was like, oh no, she's not actually evil, but like we're seeing more and more like Dawn becoming like this truly evil little elf, and it's really funny. Like she's just kind of like scheming, but the thing that I like is that up until this point I don't think we've seen Dawn suggest or do anything that is actually like potentially like catastrophic or like super mean or super like crazy. Shady,
and mostly in the confessional. So honestly, that's why it's so funny that the queens all called her evil Dawn, because so much of it has happened in scenes that they had not seen yet.
Outside of her dragging Plasma's horrendous Tweedledee and Tweedledum.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, she definitely has. It's not like she's been completely silent and only talked behind their back, but it's just a lot more comments in confessionals, pointing out that Q has Barbie hands.
Oh, that was so funny. Oh, my gosh. I was laughing so hard at that. And also these little moments. I sent you a GIF of Maya
dancing was just really
like
funny.
It's like little. It is so like I think that as we branded the All-Stars 8 season of the podcast, the Jessica Wilde, like this is the Maya season, I think, of this podcast.
Yes, this truly for the podcast, is the Maya. For sure. But the
Maya am on the page
the moment podcast. That you were alluding to that is this moment that Plain starts telling Dawn, oh, I don't want to use my potion on Nymphia because there might be a design challenge coming up. And then Dawn suggests, well, why don't you tell Nymphia that you'll give her the potion and then don't? And then even Plain is like gagged by that suggestion. Like that is not even like a funny prank. That is like, why don't we tell someone like their mom died? And then, you know, turns out she didn't. Like it's insane.
It's so funny though. I don't know. Like Dawn can get away with it, I think, in ways that Plain can't. And you know that if Plain Jane is telling you, sister, like hold on, you know it's a little bit too fucked. Which is actually, it reminds me of something coming up in the interview with Plain that Plain was telling me that she did not realize she was being as mean this season until her mother called her while watching the show and was like, girl, you're being too mean. So stay tuned for that. The performance itself, actually, I thought it was good. I mean, at the end, it did kind of start to feel like, I don't know if I started getting on board with it fully until Saphira came on. Like it felt almost like the Saphira Crystal review with opening acts or supporting acts being the other queens. Like they were all building up, like these meh performances were all building up to like the Saphira show.
Yeah.
Because she, to me, clearly blew everyone else out of the water. And it was almost like I said, it was like they were supporting acts, just building up to this giant reveal of Saphira just being amazing. And I think that a lot of people had the other performance that I think worked probably the best was actually probably Plains, because I think her lyrics did the best job at not sounding too heavy-handed with a political message. And she was also treating it as like a branding challenge, where she fused the assignment with Plains' brand. And there were some queens that were questioning her, like talking about spreading the message, like she spreads her legs and whatever. And I'm like, that, but that's like what makes lyrics in these challenges good. And that's especially what speaks to RuPaul, is when you take the challenge, you do what you're supposed to do, and then you put your own personal spin on it. And that's Plains' brand. And I thought it worked really well, and I thought it was really funny. But it also did kind of feel like Saphira was doing maybe a little bit of James Brown again after she saw how well that worked with Rue. And it was like, that's, Saphira is so good at bringing, like, okay, like, yes, we look at Saphira as mother. Like, Saphira has, like, mother energy, like we say, in the workroom when she's talking to them about, she's giving these little bits of advice that are, like, tinged with, like, motherly shade. But, like, she, it's still, like, you know, mama knows best, and she is, like, the all-seeing, all-knowing drag mother of the season. But she also, like, has this really interesting thing with her drag where there is a great deal of almost, like, masculine swag to it. And I think it's very intentional, like, especially when she did the James Brown impression. And then we see it here again, like, the way she's, like, kind of, like, sliding, and the certain dance moves that she's doing, and the way she, like, grabs the microphone. It's like, she does do this drag that is very externally, like, feminine presenting, but she does embody, like, a very fluid energy, I think, when she's on stage, that makes me think of modern performers, even like Bruno Mars, people like that. It's a very interesting mix that we're getting from Saphira. And I think this episode was a great showcase for the level of unique artistry that we've been wanting to see from Saphira over the past like 6 or 7 weeks that we maybe haven't seen since the first two episodes.
Yeah, I do like how you, in the same breath, said she was basically redoing her James Brown again, but also that it was unique. But I mean, I don't know how you get a funk song challenge and you don't infuse it with any kind of James Brown. I thought it was perfect. Yeah. I you know, from the rehearsal, I was like, they better not give her this like perfect edit of doing this great job at the rehearsal and then try to tell us like she didn't win this challenge.
Yeah.
So yeah, I was perfectly happy to get a free ticket to the Saphira Cristal show on this one. And yes, I thought she was in her rightful place, front and center. But you got another vibe from a different queen.
Yeah, I think that Q kind of was giving me Cher in her vocal delivery. But you said you were getting someone else from her.
So, okay. Oh. Do you remember her wig in this and like her face in this challenge?
Yes.
Okay. So you remember that controversial movie where Joseph Fiennes is playing Michael Jackson? That's
no.
All I could think of when I saw her.
Wait, I'm gonna Google
look.
It.
I just Hold added. On, I just
oh,
added.
You have it. Oh my god!
That's all I could see with the wig and her hair for some reason, and she's wearing like this all red leather, like his Thriller all red looks.
Yeah,
it was very. It
yeah,
was
that's
very
it. You
me.
Got it.
Yep.
You got it. Yep. That is, I encourage all of our listeners to please Google.
Joseph Google Fiennes as Michael Jackson.
Yeah, yeah. That's, you're going to get blocked. You are going to get blocked.
Well, hey, at least it gives us another listener. Q, if you're listening, I do love you, but I love your Michael Jackson drag too. Okay, so the runway theme was True Colors, in which each queen came out in an outfit inspired by a different color. And even though there are 7 queens left and 7 colors in the rainbow, they all got to do whatever they wanted instead of being assigned a color, even if someone else was in the same color. So we should break down our favorite and least favorite looks. But I want to point out maybe the funniest moment of the episode to me. Maya has been completely read by Rue and Michelle many times this season for wearing gowns and jewelry that hide her neck. And then during the critiques on this episode, Michelle says, "It's the best you've ever looked," and says, "You're letting us have your neck." And then it cuts to Maya wearing a gown with a neckline that is up just as high, if not higher, than every dress she's worn. It's practically a turtleneck. I even like took a screen grab of both and I was like measuring. There is not a centimeter of extra neck in this gown. So there did seem to be very overt gaggery happening with the placements and critiques. But first, let's get into these looks. Honestly, I feel like I was a little underwhelmed for the most part. Like, they were all fine. There wasn't anything that I'm, I guess, still dreaming about. But how did you feel?
There were two. I mean, Maya, I thought, looked good as usual. I thought Maya was solid. I don't think that there were any bad looks. But yeah, mostly I was not excited. The only two that excited me, obviously, number one, Safira. Like, I just continue to marvel at how she packed for this season because, yes. I mean, that dress was humongous and it was so good.
And the first time not wearing biscuit heels, she's wearing pumps, except the like, you only see them for a split second when she raises the dress, which I just thought was funny.
I know.
It looked so good.
The other one that came close to, like, gaggy was, I think, Nymphia's was pretty good too, but
yes, I agree. It's just that at this point, I mean, even in the song directly before it, she was wearing all yellow with bananas.
Yeah, it's
so
it's,
I think that overkill. Actually kind of stepped on her own design. Like, I would rather have her blow us away by not wearing yellow for once in the song and then come out in full yellow glory, because yeah, I think on its own,
yeah,
definitely that was probably my look of the night.
Yeah, or maybe if she came out in like a look of like if she did brown and it was like rotted bananas or something. Like, oh my god. Why do you have a rotted banana?
Like I said last time, I have a lot of stuff around just in case it ever were to come up. I have not been letting this rot, but I did notice it in my fridge and I was going to throw it out, and then I thought, well, just in case we talk about it, just in case Joey mentions rotted banana, I want to be fully ready. I was ready to do so.
You prepared a prop that you were not planning to bring up on your own, but just wanted to have on hand as a backup in case I reference something about a rotten bit. Chili, in your mind, what other props do you have sitting here? Please reveal.
Well,
what
maybe,
other
props maybe, you have maybe here. We'll find out in a later time. But okay, what did you think of Dawn's though? Because I think if it had been sleep demon paralysis runway, like, great. But at first I was like, what color is she? Like, is she supposed to be gray? And then when I figured out she was also doing blue, I don't know. That was almost like an Amanda to me of like, it's a perfectly fine look. But in this runway theme, I just didn't fully get why it was being used here.
Well, so her color, she explained in the voiceover, was navy blue because I think it was consistent with like the mental health stuff she was talking about earlier in this episode when she was saying that, like, you know, she was talking about her anxiety and then she said that navy blue is like her calming color. Yeah. So I think that probably goes along with like sleep paralysis and anxiety and stuff. But I mean, that's a lot to explain. Obviously you can fit any color. Like, any runway look, honestly, like, fits this theme. It just has to be a consistent color. And, like, it was a consistent color, I guess. It was just maybe a drab color. I didn't think her look was bad. I thought it was okay. It reminded me of that Stephen King movie, Cat's Eye.
No, don't say that. That's my most scary movie of all time as a child.
Same.
It
freaked me out as a kid. It freaked me out.
I still have trouble when I close my door. I'm like, yeah, if I hear bells, I still get scared. That's why I don't like cats. Even though the cat was kind of the savior of the movie, I still don't want it anywhere near me. It's really one of the scariest movies I've ever seen in my life. I watched it when I was like 4 or 5. It was traumatic.
I agree. That's the same. I used to have nightmares about it. Just his little teeth and his little, like,
no, ooh, now I'm getting
the
scared.
Bird cage. Like, oh my god, the bird
gnome
cage
troll thing down here. Oh god, no.
Julian, behind you.
I mean, I have like so much weird shit behind me. He could be back there. Okay, we gotta get this. I am wearing my own calming color shirt that says I love purple, and it is purple.
Jillian continues to do visuals for a non-visual podcast.
I was, you know, I had this on just in case you mentioned purple. Okay, but how did you feel about Like, I actually thought that this was, as yes, patron saint of our podcast this season, Maya slash Myra. But I honestly thought that she that this was going to be her week to go. I because they showed that she was like dancing, like her dancing was great. She was picking up the choreo, and then in the song, I actually thought she was a little bit shaky. And then the rhyming equal with equal, and then wearing when she came out in the dress without the neck, I was like, oh, you know, it's pretty, but yeah, they're going to say it's the same. And then she got glowing reviews. So I was just fully stumped by what the hell they were doing this episode with the placements and all that.
I think it probably had something. It's weird because, as we'll get into later, like, it was a non-elimination episode. So I maybe that had something to do with it, and they wanted to, I don't know. It was weird.
It was also, yes, it was also just, I don't know, ironic, coincidental that Rue does this kind of dramatic, like, she's going to ask them who should go home and why, of like, don't lie to me. Are you registered to vote? It was so overly dramatic, and they didn't even set it up.
The biggest news of this episode, though, is that Plain Jane, after fielding pleas from Morphine and Nymphia, actually used her immunity potion for good this week and saved her sister, Nymphia, from elimination. But as things turned out, after every other queen was declared safe, Saphira and Morphine were the top two and lip-synced for their legacies, with Saphira winning and no one going home, which essentially rendered the immunity potion completely pointless. So how do we feel about Plain using it this week? Was it like a calculated move on her part, do we think?
I mean, yes, and I think we've all called it. You called it, I feel like, early on this show, that she would probably use this as a redemption arc. I feel like a lot of fans had called it out. So yeah, it wasn't a huge shock to me. And then especially when there was not dramatic stakes, like if she had landed in the bottom, or it had meant that Morphine ended up landing in the bottom and going home, or someone, you know, like any kind of stakes at all would have been much more interesting than this. So I don't know, like, curious next week what it means and what the conversation is, but I was a little underwhelmed by how it played out.
Yeah, it seemed like it was not. It literally, like, it introduces this twist where if you're just going to have a non-elimination, like, it renders your own twist completely pointless. Like, what was the point? I mean, sometimes they do this with challenges, and a lot of reality shows do this, where if it's a challenge where it's particularly, like, important, or there's a message or something involved with the challenge, they will not kick someone off. But yeah, it still felt like, If you knew this challenge was coming, why not say, okay, well, the due date for this is actually the week before and not this week? It just is, it feels weird.
Or leave it hanging. Don't say there's a due date.
Yeah.
Or do it like All Stars lipstick voting rules, where she would have to like say who's on the immunity, but not present it until after they had the critiques and had placed someone in the bottom. And then if it turned out that it's Nymphia versus someone else in the bottom, maybe even after they lip sync, Nymphia's on her way home, and then they pull it out as a gag, or do it like a Survivor immunity idol where people might not know that you actually have it. And, you know, then you're like, Jade Plain is eliminated, and then she's like, oh, actually, I've had this immunity the whole time and nobody knew. So, exactly. Yeah, I just wish that if they do, I'm not going to say that I don't want them to ever revisit this, but I would like them to think out the strategy and production of using it again.
Agree. And Plain, it seems to maintain in this interview coming up that it was not strategy to get people to like her. So we'll see. I don't even think Nymphia even really needed the potion, because Jamal said in Untucked that Nymphia did a great job. So, I mean, I don't know what the sentiment was like on set, but it appears that if there was going to be judging, like, I don't know that Nymphia would have been in the bottom in the judges' eyes.
I'm going to say that Nymphia absolutely had the worst verse. If you thought that Maya rhyming equaling equal, like, I would urge you to go listen to her verse. I do not think that Jamal, who found something nice to say about everybody because he's a genuinely nice person and I don't think has ever like fully read anyone, he literally said it was perky in your way. That was his compliment. It wasn't like, oh my god, Nymphia, you did such a great job. So no, that's also a gross factual error, and just not true. I think that she would have absolutely been in the bottom with Q if this had been a normal fair judging.
And I famously 30 seconds ago did not say that I thought Nymphia did a good job. I asked the question if Nymphia actually needed it because Jamal said that she did a good job, which you appropriately answered here. And I will also confirm that I do not think Nymphia was in the top. But just based on what Jamal said, it seems like maybe the sentiment was more positive for Nymphia. So who knows what would have happened if Plain had not used the potion for her.
So after this episode, have our personal power rankings or estimations for how this season is going to play out changed at all? Was this episode enough to change perception of certain queens? This definitely gave me, I was sort of getting worried about Saphira, like, because I think she has deserved other wins in the past, same way as I feel that Maya deserved the win for the SNL challenge.
Same.
I was happy to get this. Like, I don't like it when everyone's like they're overly kind of thirsty for the wins or too preoccupied by the rankings. But this was a case where I was like, all right, I don't want Saphira to end up in a final and then have everyone be like, oh, well, she only had one win. So
yeah. Now she has two. And I was happy about it, too. And I think, I mean, clearly, like, there was no question, like, nobody else did even nearly as good as Saphira did in this challenge. And I kind of feel that way about Snatch Game, too. Like, I don't know, like, Saphira clearly, I think, did the best. And she had Rue laughing the hardest. She did the favorite Rue volley thing the best. Like,
I agree.
Like, Saphira was okay, but Saphira should have 3 challenge wins at this point. But I think in terms of changing perception, I mean, I think it's the statistics are just like increasingly now stacked against Dawn. I think like if you would have asked me at the beginning of this season, who are the queens who are absolutely guaranteed for sure to win a challenge at some point this season, I absolutely would have said Dawn would have been in that category just looking at her.
Yeah.
And the way she does drag, you would have thought immediately like, oh, Dawn is going to be a fan favorite. She's also going to win at least one challenge. And we're now on week, 10? And she still hasn't won a challenge, which is so weird to me.
Yeah.
But then I look back and I'm like, is Dawn my personal winner for any challenge so far? And I think the closest she came, I think I actually did say that I thought Dawn should have won the ball, right? I think I did say that. Or she at least should have been the top because she had the cow. She had the cow look, which was like, I think probably one of the best looks of the whole ball. And then I forget what she wore for the other thing, but I think Dawn, that's probably the closest that I think she's come. But every other week, I'm like, yeah, she's felt safe every other week, I think.
Yeah, I think so. And yeah, I think she suffers from so many good designers on this season. And that seems to be the one she really would excel at. But also I don't actually love the variety of challenges that we're getting. Like, it does seem like a lot of design challenges, but none of them were unconventional. They all were material, and there hasn't really been, I mean, even though the doll design challenge was branding, it still wasn't like quite the same branding challenges that we've seen in other seasons.
Yeah.
And I don't know, like putting together their own skits to sell a branded item, or I don't know, like I just feel like there is, I mean, we still have several episodes to go, but
For the record, that Jilly and Closet just said the word skit.
Okay, yes. This is the difference between a sketch and a skit. I'm not talking about their writing out, like using a sketch comedy background to fully form a comedic narrative. That would be a sketch.
Skits we would see on Jillian's Closet favorite show, Saturday Night Live.
No, a skit is anything I'm doing as either of us are doing as part of this podcast, like something you do at a little church camp or something.
Famous skitter, Jillian Closet.
Jillian Skit. But yeah, there are some girls here that I just don't feel like I fully, like I do. I mean, so the good thing about Dawn, like I do fully feel like I understand her drag and I really appreciated her. Like I've been on board for the elf and all of that kind of like whimsical ness of her drag since the beginning. I think her make, but like even in this, even though I had some issues with the outfit fitting the theme, like I thought her makeup was so just pretty and incredible. Like the way she had like had the blue as part of her eyelashes, I thought was just great. So it's not like I don't know who Dawn is or haven't seen enough of her, even though she's just because right. she's been safe. I mean, we also get her as a narrator a lot, and I think that's by virtue of how willing to be shady she is in these confessionals.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I do wish that we got to see more of just like what all else they could present on this show in terms of different challenges, maxi dress challenges.
She's good. She's entertaining, but she's not, I think, living up to maybe the standard that a lot of fans before the show had placed upon her.
Yeah.
So she's good. She's a good, solid, funny, welcome presence. Like I always enjoy seeing Dawn when she's on screen and whatever she has to say. So she's an enjoyable part of the season, but I think as it's shaping up, like Dawn seems like a good, this seems like a good foundation success story for Dawn on a future season of All Stars. Like this is a good entryway into the season. So,
if the sad time comes that you're going to have to do an exit elimination interview with Dawn, can you please just ask the question of what does the key unlock?
Key?
The key. What key? She wears this giant key earring. And although Nymphia wears key earrings, Dawn's looks like an actual, like her house key. And I'm just so curious.
Yeah. Okay. Yes, absolutely noted. Fasten your seatbelts and please place your carry-on items and wig heads into the bins ahead, because we are soaring right back with a very tea-filled interview with Plain Jane right after this. Welcome back to EW's Quick Drag Podcast, where the tea is taxiing on the runway, and I am here to collect it all in baggage claim with my next guest, whose burger finger has greased up and riled up both the Drag Race fandom and her season 16 sisters, all before her congenial moment, where we're not ready to call it an era just yet, kicked in when she saved Nymphia Wind with her immunity potion this week. To discuss it all, please welcome the fabulous Plain Jane. Hey, Plain, how are you?
Hi, I'm good. Well, Joey, I want to actually correct you. I'm always congenial. I'm always, it's not a moment, it's not an era, it's just a lifestyle at this point. So
it's perennial. Yes, perennial Plain Jane congenial era.
Of course.
Sorry, I stand corrected. but I appreciate your time today. I don't recall in recent history a contestant causing as much of a stir, we'll say, as you have. And we have really? A lot of things to, well, I think recently, yes. But we have some things to talk about with this episode, but let's just break down everything that brought us here first, because you have polarized this fandom from episode one. And last week, I don't know if you saw our interview with Plasma, but Plasma said in her exit interview that you came to the show wanting to be, as she said, a bitch. So did you study past villains on the show to create a character for this season? Or like, why was maybe being a villain so appealing to you?
Listen, you know, Plasma is, you know, she's absolutely right. You know, before the show, I was a blank slate. I really, you know, I had no identity whatsoever. I was like an amoeba, a paramecium, a bacteria, a single cell organism with no sort of distinguishable characteristics or features.
Right, right. And
I turned on the earliest seasons of Drag Race and I took notes, baby. I studied, mm-hmm. I calculated, I did intense mathematical equations.
Yeah.
And at the end of my research and my scientific analysis, I concluded that I was going to go onto the show and I was going to be the biggest, most iconic bitch that the world has ever seen. But you know what's actually closer to reality is that I just I just kind of did whatever. Honestly, Joey, when there are cameras in your face, I feel like we're all kind of guilty of like adopting a certain like persona on camera.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I just feel like I kind of resorted to being like a little bit more of an extreme version of myself. And that happened to involve talking a lot of shit.
Yeah.
So can you really blame me?
I mean, I think that it's, you know, we are all the fans are all very well aware of, you know, the certain archetypes on this show, as whether it's due to actual performance on the show, editing, whatever they want to blame it on. I think that, you know, you came in, it was very clear, I think, whether it was deliberate or not, I think it's very clear the sort of role that you maybe were aware that you were going to fill anyway. And I think it's interesting because the narrative took a twist this episode when you saved Nymphia with your potion. So do you think you maybe saw that you were falling into, whether by your choice or otherwise, that you were falling into maybe a villain role? And was this move to save Nymphia like a calculated move to combat that?
So I don't actually... No. Well, first of all, there's no telling how fans will respond to you or your other castmates, like after watching the show, after the show airs. You know, we had no clue what was going on. And what made using the potion even more difficult was that we had to use it before critiques. Mm-hmm. So we only had sort of, and this challenge wasn't necessarily a challenge where we got to see each other perform. So it's not like we had like the best idea. And from what we could tell while performing, everybody was doing an amazing job.
Yeah.
So, you know, Nymphia had expressed to me that she was worried that she was in the bottom and that she didn't feel confident in her performance. So essentially, that made me assume that she also didn't do so well. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
So based on how she felt about it. So I figured, you know, Nymphia is going to be in the bottom. And she is somebody who should have, you know, this safety net of immunity. If I'm going to do something with it, I'm going to stick true to my word. Something that I said from the very beginning, which was, I'm not even going to need this immunity potion, baby.
True.
And you know, who knows, maybe on this week, it didn't really serve me to be so prideful, but, you know, I thought Nymphia was in danger, and I thought, you know, hey, if there's anything quote unquote iconic that I could do with this immunity potion other than, you know, just saving myself, which is kind of like, I don't need it, then I'd rather give it to like a friend who feels as though that they need it. And at that point in the competition, I mean, we're all fierce competitors. It doesn't really affect me one way or another who lands in that bottom, because I want them all gone. You know what I mean?
Very true.
So it's like, if Nymphia is not in the bottom, then what? That leaves Q in the bottom. Q can also go. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it wasn't like not a move of strategy, but it also wasn't like, you know, it wasn't not congenial, if you will. So I was being nice, but I was also being strategic. That's how I felt in my mind.
Yeah. No, I get that. I get that answer. And I think I want to go back to something that you said earlier, though, when you said that you weren't, you know, you all don't really know how this is necessarily going to come off. But I think that there are some things that, like this moment, I think you probably were aware in the moment that you were getting some pushback and that this would maybe come off as a very positive and sisterly thing to do. But then I think back to, you know, when you were ranking, like I lived for when you we completely fucked with Raina Queen and just like put the tops at the bottom, which you did to Nymphia. Yeah. So, I mean, are you saying that you weren't aware how like moments like that were going to come off?
Well, okay. So moments like that, you know, I was aware that that was probably going to be wildly entertaining and fun. but it also, you know, was totally to my own benefit. I mean, at the end of the day, Joey, apart from being, you know, a gorgeously stunning, incredibly talented drag queen, as you have come to know, love, and appreciate on the show, I am also, you know, I'm entering this, you know, not just, I enter the competition not just as like a potential game of strategy, but, you know, wanting to show people that, to show the world that, you know, I'm a star and that I'm not scared to make these sort of decisions.
Yeah.
So, you know, that also came into play, of course, but mm-hmm. at the end of the day, like, I just wanted to have fun. And, you know, I think a lot of people can relate to having that sort of, you know, being a little shady, being a little messy. I think, you know, there's we're multifaceted individuals as human beings, and we all have a little bit of a demon spirit living yes. inside. So, you know, if I embody that for people, then you know, so be it. But at the end of the day, you know, I did have an incredibly good time. And to be quite honest with you, you know, sure, maybe I was expecting a little bit of pushback, but I was like, in my delusional mind, I was like, everybody's going to love everything that I'm doing.
Yeah.
I'm so beautiful and I'm so correct. You know, not necessarily the case, but, you know, we're getting there.
So, like, watching it back, I mean, do you think that some of the things that you were saying, like, does it come off to you like mean, or does it come off to you in the same spirit as someone like Bianca Del Rio? Like, do you see a difference between the two?
Well, I feel like Bianca knows how to navigate interactions a little bit better than I do, to be honest. So maybe Bianca has me beat there when it comes to the funny at some points. But honestly, yeah, I mean, a good objective voice of reason that I've been referring to has been my mother, mm-hmm. Who has been watching along. So whenever I sort of have, like, you know, a clashing moment with one of the other girls, I watch it. I'm like, okay, well, what's the issue? You know, I handled that well. You know, mm-hmm. I don't see a problem. And then I, you know, I talked to my mom about the episode, and she was like, you're kind of mean.
Oh, so your mom is even telling you this.
No, exactly. So that always kind of puts things into perspective and grounds me and makes me think, like, oh,
yeah,
maybe that wasn't, maybe, you know, it's all fun and games for the sake of television, but, you know, maybe that mm-hmm. wasn't like the best way to handle that situation or what yeah. happened.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, it is what it is, mm-hmm. as they say. And I don't necessarily have any regrets. I'm learning how to sort of navigate everything and deal with, you know, so many people talking about me all at once. And I think that what I've sort of come to gripes with is that, you know, stand on big business, honey, you know, own your shit. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, I said what I said, and it aired. And at the end of the day, I meant it, but, you know, improve going forward, and, you know, put a little bit more thought and care into
yeah.
how you have certain conversations with people. So
yeah, I understand that. And I, before we move on to some of the other things on this note, I just want to ask, because Tsunami suggested in her exit interview a few weeks ago that this whole thing, which I wish I had known this information that happened this week back when I talked to Tsunami, but she suggested in her exit interview that you and Nymphia might be romantically involved in some way. So quickly, what's the tea with that?
I think the entire cast thinks we're fucking. but let me tell you, I feel like Nymphia, you know, I would marry Nymphia, but it would be a sexless open marriage. So I love her very much, but, you know, it's just a very, very strong friendship.
Okay.
You know,
no tea there. Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, I do just quickly want to ask, I know we're running short on time here, but I have, you know, I want to talk about the Amanda stuff because she came out as trans in an interview with me earlier this year, and she opened up a little bit about your relationship. And, you know, she was saying that being read by you triggered a lot of her anxieties related to that identity journey. So I'm just wondering why maybe Amanda was, who was not necessarily, I think, probably a threat in the competition, given that she had the feedback that she was getting from the judges and the other queens. So I'm wondering why she was maybe the target for some of this stuff. And if you had known maybe that journey that she was going through, would you have maybe softened your approach with her?
Yeah, for sure. I would have softened my approach. You know, there's no way of knowing what people are going through. And I do want to, you know, congratulate Amanda and give her props on her journey and on coming out as trans. That's great. That's great for Amanda. And I definitely, having known, I definitely would have approached her differently. But, you know, I wouldn't necessarily approach anybody like that anyway, in sort of a natural, you know, non-man-made environment or okay. setting. But you know, I think that ultimately, you know, what happened happened. You know, I approached her in the way that I did, and from that moment, Amanda and I definitely on screen did not have the best relationship. But and you know, again, I've apologized to Amanda for you know, coming at her the way that I did out the gate. But again, I think it made for some great TV moments. And I don't think that Amanda was, I mean, as you saw, Amanda wasn't just a passive, you know, entity in that whole debacle. You know, she was an active sort of participant, and she, you know, threw it back at me, and she kept throwing it back, which is fun. It's fair game. And
she cut back every time. Yeah.
Yeah. Ultimately, you know, I think that it was a conducive environment to us both being bitchy to one another to an extent. And that's fine. I think it makes for good television. I think that Amanda, you know, although maybe it did genuinely hurt her that I came for her drag. I think that she sort of used it to, you know, make good television with me. You know, I don't think she was like a passive party in that, she didn't know how to sort of play it up for the camera as well as I did. So
yeah,
if that makes sense. So, you know, of course, you know, feelings aside, which we've already discussed, I think it's people will look back at it as fun mm-hmm. team. So well, you know, otherwise it's like I said, like how can we move forward from this moment?
Yeah. You know, so. You did state in the confessional on episode 5 that when an entertainer sort of puts themselves on stage, that it is fair game to criticize what they put out there. And then on that note, it was interesting watching you on social media sort of get annoyed with the past Rue Girls for criticizing Burger Finger, especially I think of someone like Bob. Yes. So I'm just wondering why you did get so annoyed with that. And then how did that lead to you being on stage with Bob and Madonna like days later after that fight with Bob?
So I guess I got annoyed with it because I feel like instead of just offering up kind of like a subjective opinion on Burger Finger and being like, you know, I didn't find it funny, you know, whatever, let's move on. Bob kind of went on a bit of a tirade and was like, it has no artistic merit. It's derivative of things that we've seen before, which in my opinion was a complete misjudgment of what that was. So, and I feel like Bob is somebody with a much bigger platform sort of incites and inspires a lot of other people to hold a similar opinion. So with so many people already shitting on Burger Finger, it was like, you're going on this like tirade, mischaracterizing the number, and for what reason, which was a little bit annoying for me to hear. But at the end of the day, I think we all just want to move on from Burger Finger at this point, you know, including myself, but I will still keep performing it to my own trauma triggers and torment. But Madonna's team reached out to me, and I don't think it had really anything to do with Bob, which is what was crazy about it. And I knew Bob was headlining that tour, so you know, I was ready to confront, to be put in the sort of enemy, I don't know, what is it called when you're in the military and you're in the front?
Front lines? I have no idea.
There we go. Anyways, so in the enemy's camp, if you will.
Oh, okay. All right.
So I was ready for that confrontation. And, I think Bob was shook when, Mother Madonna reached down and grabbed my hand and pulled me on stage. And
so Bob didn't talk to you at all at this tour.
Well, she handed me my chair when it was time for me to see Madonna. So no, but Bob actually did come backstage and said hi, and Bob was totally, totally nice. And I expressed to Bob that I'm, you know, obviously a huge fan, a petite fan, if you will.
Aww.
But, Bob and I kind of talked and, you know, resolved things, and there's no sort of genuine hard feelings. And I think that's the case with like a lot of stuff that goes on social media. I mean, we're drag queens, we're attention whores, and, we got to generate conversation at the end of the day, Joey, just like the conversation that you and I are having now.
Exactly. Well, I really appreciate this conversation, Plain, and I am interested to see where this season goes from here now that you're on the show in your congenial era, as we saw with this potion. So we'll see where this goes from here.
Of course.
All right. Thank you, Plain, so much. I really appreciate your time.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure. Thanks, Joey.
Thank you again to Plain Jane for kikiing and baggage claim with us. If you enjoyed The Tea Spilled, rate and subscribe to us. Give us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcast, because it helps us bring you more exclusive chats with the cast.
Tune in next week when we'll have an interview with season 16's next eliminated queen, if we don't get duped with another non-elimination episode. Until then, have an equal night.
Equal. Quick Drag is an Entertainment Weekly podcast hosted and produced by Joey Nolfi and Jillian Cederholm, produced and edited by Sammy Junio. Thanks for listening.
This weather, cloudy weather. Ooh!